Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio, and I love all things tech. And it is time to continue our story about spy technology. We started that in the classic episode last week. This is another classic episode. This one published on January 8th, 2014. And we take another look at spy tech, both fictional and realistic. Let's take a listen.
So supposedly John Dee, the 16th century science guy,
Dr. John Dee,
may have been the first 007 to perform espionage in the royal service. He served as an advisor to the queen and reportedly signed his messages with two zeros, symbolizing his job as the queen's eyes, followed by a seven with the top drawn out over the zeros. The number seven reportedly having some kind of occult meaning to Dee. So his code name, if you will, was 007.
And that you can find, and we actually have an article all about James Bond at How Stuff Works. You can learn more about the background and the supposed mythology behind it. By the way, I've got another trivia tidbit about Dr. John Dee.
Yeah.
Did you know that according to H.P. Lovecraft, Dr. John Dee was the man responsible for translating the Necronomicon into English, although that translation was never found?
I did not.
Tidbit. Okay, so let's jump into the James Bond series now. When we last we left off, we had worked our way up to Moonraker, the 1979 film. And
yes, we are in the middle of Roger Moore's...
the best James Bond ever, as I mentioned in the last one. George Lazenby, close second. Roger Moore, man.
You can I could just hear the frustrated squeals of James Bond fans everywhere.
Third place, Timothy Dalton.
just trying not to kill you with their minds.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine. So Moonraker had... This was the era where the Roger Moore era, where the gadgets really started going crazy.
Completely wacky.
Yeah, we keep in mind... Lauren and I met before we came in to record this, where we cut a bunch of gadgets because we just for time.
There's just too many. Yeah.
And in this particular era alone, I think like 60% of our cuts came from these, right?
Yeah.
So starting off, we have a wrist dart gun with poison tipped darts, also armor piercing darts. So he had two different types. And there are lots of electronic dart guns that have been created over the past, including well, there's one that was not even, this wasn't electric. It was actually a bullet one. It was a gun. It was a glove mounted gun. So the barrel of the gun was actually on the palm side, and it was designed so that when you would make a fist and punch something, the gun, which the barrel would hopefully clear your knuckles, would fire off. And the idea being that it was developed in World War II by the OSS. And the idea was that, you know, if you were to create this sort of thing and show a person punching someone else and the other person dies as a result of being punched, it would scare the heck out of your enemies. Like, wow, they are so strong. Here's the thing. Didn't work so well. So hardly anyone ever fired one of these things. There are some interesting pictures online of the various gun gloves. There have been people who have tried to make this kind of technology work, but no one's really done it in such a way that it was ever practical.
Mm-hmm.
So wrist dart gun, not necessarily practical. There's probably other ways you could, you know,
better
in
ways
someone's
to get
life.
Darts out.
Yes.
Other kind of impractical thing, a cigarette case with an X-ray safe cracking device embedded.
Yeah,
in it.
Not sure how you would fit X-ray scanning technology into the form factor of a cigarette case.
That sounds impossible.
It sounds pretty hard to me, yeah. Also had a wristwatch. There are a lot of wristwatches in James Bond. That's one of the things that we ended up cutting some of them because there's so many that were like, yeah, we've already... But anyway, this particular wristwatch had a detonator, a fuse, and an explosive charge built into it, which again, that's a lot of stuff to pack into a tiny form factor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can totally understand a detonator in a watch, a transmitter. That's something that I could, you know, especially once you get into the transistor era, and we're well into it now. In 1979, transistors are definitely a thing.
Oh, sure.
When you get into that miniaturization where you press a button and it sends out a radio signal, I totally get that. But being able to build in all this other stuff so that it can contain everything is a little on the science fiction side.
Yeah, that's dicey in terms of physics.
There was also something shown off in Q's laboratory that disturbed me.
Are you talking about the Mexican machine gun?
Yeah, the Mexican machine gun. And so this is problematic. So a lot of the scenes show Q walking through the laboratory and some outlandishly ridiculous gadget is going off in the background.
Yeah, just completely without comment. That's just happening.
Occasionally they might stop and say, oh, have you seen this 007? It's a Mexican machine gun. And it looks like a mannequin. It is a mannequin. Of a person wearing like a sombrero and taking a siesta.
Yeah, like a troublingly racist mannequin.
Yeah, and then the chest opens up, revealing a machine gun that fires off. So, that was a little problematic. And then there, of course, is the character of Holly Goodhead, who had lots of gadgets. She was a CIA agent in Moonraker,
mm-hmm.
and she had her own weapons, which
yes.
included a pen, a notebook, and perfume.
It was a poison pen.
Yes. Well,
it was a dart shooting notebook.
Well, all women carry this.
It was flamethrower perfume.
I'm sure you have some at your desk.
I do.
And it's probably pink too, because we all know what ladies like, right? Yeah. No. To be fair, the James Bond franchise has never been accused of being forward thinking as far as women are concerned.
That's race when it comes to that.
Or
matter.
Race, yes.
So
no, there's some terrible examples, but we're avoiding. Of course, we're concentrating on the gadgets, not the social commentary. So moving up to 1981, we're still with Roger Moore.
Still, yeah, for your eyes only.
Yeah, no, it was not just for my eyes, Lauren. It was for the world's eyes. Oh, you're talking about the title of the movie.
Yes.
Okay, yes, for your eyes only. Yes. They introduced a computer-like device called the Identigraph in this, which was interesting. The idea was that you could create a composite picture of a person by adding or removing distinguishing features.
On a computer.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, no, the nose is bigger. No, the eyes are wider set, that kind of thing, which is totally something we can do now.
Yeah. Facial composition techniques had been in use for decades and decades at this point, but I don't think that we got a digital version until the late 1980s.
So this is kind of, again, another sort of predictive technology,
yeah.
but
mm-hmm.
it's certainly something that has been used since.
Yeah.
And we still have, you know, sketch artists who work with police departments too, but now there are also these technologies that let people kind of mix and match basic features where you get a general idea of what someone might look like based upon a description.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
It's great artistic technology.
Yep.
Also in this film, we had an update to the communications wristwatch. I think last we had kind of a ticker tape sort of thing going on.
Yeah.
And this one could receive digital messages and be used like a walkie-talkie.
Which was fantastic because it meant that Roger Moore could clear out all that extra space in his hollow arm for the battery that would be necessary to run this device.
You know, as
that, for those who don't get that joke, you need to listen to the other podcast, the other episode.
Of course, these days, that's totally a thing that we have in our pockets all the time. But yes, at the time, it was still a little bit forward thinking. We wouldn't start to get wristwatches with that kind of capacity until the late 80s at the very earliest.
Yeah, and of course, we've talked all about smartwatches in previous episodes, including the most famous one, the Dick Tracy wrist radio.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been lots of people who have created various kinds of watches that were also communicators. But now we're finally getting into the era where they aren't super bulky or have, you know, no battery life whatsoever. So definitely a little ahead of its time there, but supposed to be. Moving on to the next Roger Moore film, 1983's Octopussy, which I saw in a drive-in movie theater.
Wow.
I remember distinctly going to see this movie and thinking, even as a kid in 1983, same year that Return of the Jedi came out, even as a kid thinking, this is silly.
I would argue that Octopussy is the silliest of the James Bond movies.
It certainly had some of the silliest examples of technology and camouflage, with the possible exception of a car that we'll talk about toward the end of this episode. But for one thing, they had the wristwatch and pen combo that this part wasn't so silly.
Mm-hmm.
The idea was that the pen had surveillance technology like a microphone in it that you would surreptitiously leave someplace and then you could pick up the transmission on the wristwatch and listen in on what was going on. Not that crazy an idea, actually. So I kind of get that one. Also, the pen had some nitric and hydrochloric acid in it that could
clearly
dissolve stuff. Because occasionally you have to dissolve a bad guy's face.
Right.
You know, and you might not have the Ark of the Covenant near you. So
no,
you
sure,
gotta
of
do
course.
So then there was a weapon that one of the nameless henchmen in this movie used. There was a buzzsaw slash yo-yo type thing.
I don't think that it was intended to be a yo-yo. I think it was purely for weapon purposes. I don't think that the bad guy was trying to trick anyone with it.
No, he wasn't trying to walk the dog.
It was a buzzsaw that had yo-yo functionality.
Yeah. So they thought ahead a little bit. So there was like a handpiece this guy wore where he could hold the blade. It looked like a saw blade, you know, and it looked like a saw blade that's on a cable. But the guy who was using it was mostly using it from above. He was on a level higher up than where James Bond was.
And you could kind of throw it down and have it come back into your hand.
Right. And it would spin on the end of its rope, sort of like a yo-yo would if you did the sleep.
If you have a trick yo-yo.
Yeah. Just, you know, it's called sleeping. But it could cut through like all this stuff. Like it cuts through a table that's got like a big fruit plate on it because, you know, that's visually interesting. And truth is, unless there was a motor that was turning that saw blade, that just wouldn't work because as soon as it made contact with something solid, it would start to lose velocity. So it might embed in something.
Sure. You could probably get it to injure a person pretty well.
Sure. It just wouldn't continue to cut. It wouldn't continue to rotate and cut. So that's not realistic. In fact, a larger version of this sort of thing was used in a later James Bond film, but on an industrial level where it was supposed to be something meant to cut down trees and it ends up cutting James Bond's car in half.
Unlikely.
Yeah.
Something that was more likely was a TV watch. But Bond had a color TV display embedded in a wristwatch. Which...
Have you seen any pictures of this thing? I'll tell you what, all the pictures online of this thing, the still image that they picked.
Which one?
Woman's cleavage.
Shocking. I'm shocked.
Every single one. By the way, if you're going out there rushing to look at Google image search right now after I said that, for shame. But it was one of those things where I was looking at pictures of these different gadgets because some of them I was unfamiliar with. I haven't seen all the Bond films. So I was like, I want to see a picture of this.
Mm-hmm. Or perhaps it's been a while in many cases.
Right, right. And then, like, I have no memory of this TV watch, even though I remember watching Octopussy. And so I looked it up and I was like, oh, really?
Seiko had actually come out with a two-color TV watch the previous year. So that was totally legit, yeah. Almost.
Yeah. It was a little bit smaller than what you would expect. And had a little...
The color.
The color was better. But it was still on line with the sort of stuff that was coming out. You know,
right.
And you expect that whatever James Bond has is bleeding-edge technology.
Yes. Other bleeding-edge technology are my two favorite from this film, which are probably my two favorite of any James Bond film ever in terms of pure ridiculous factor.
Yeah.
We've got the fake horse.
Yeah, there's a horse trailer with a fake horse, and the back end of the fake horse lifts up, and James Bond pulls out a miniature aircraft that was hidden inside the horse and horse trailer. So you've got this camouflaged trailer. Like, it could have just been a trailer. Why did it have to be a horse trailer with a fake horse in it that's hiding a gyrocopter?
That is a question for the ages, Jonathan. I cannot answer.
I would say that this is the dumbest thing that happens in Octopussy, except for one other thing.
Except for the fact that there is a crocodile-shaped motorboat.
Yeah.
There's a crocodile-shaped... It's incredible to me that multiple people at a movie studio said, this is a great plan, let us enact it. And this continues to be terrific, let us go ahead with it.
Not only that, but someone paid for that crocodile-shaped motorboat prop.
They did.
Paid a lot.
Yeah.
There might have been multiple ones that they had to decide which one of these is the best crocodile-shaped boat prop. Oh, man. All right, let's move on.
Things do improve in a way. We get Never Say Never Again in 1983 with a return of Sean Connery.
Now, this was a film that was not made by the same studio that was making all the other James Bond films. Mm-hmm. So some people don't include it. Some people do. We're including it because why not? It's actually kind of based on the same story as Thunderball was. So if you remember in our last episode, Connery was in Thunderball too. So essentially he's making two.
A remake of his own movie
in a way. So in this one, he had a pen that had an explosive charge in it that was meant to fire a projectile, which you could do. I mean, we talked about the lipstick and cigarette, one-shot pistols mm-hmm. in the mm-hmm. past. Obviously, you couldn't make it be a pen. Like, it couldn't be made out of the same stuff as your regular pen, because that wouldn't hold up under the stress
of... explode in your hand, yeah. Which would suck.
Yeah, that would be bad. That's what we call a bad result. But technically, it is possible. I thought I'd pull up another kind of funky spy gun. I like to bring up real-life examples whenever we talk about these fictional ones. There actually was this cell phone... that looks like it dates from the early 90s. It's a big, clunky, candy bar style cell phone.
Uh-huh.
All right. But if you were to bisect it, so that the top half comes away from the bottom half, you would see that there are four bullets that can be in this thing, and it can actually fire bullets when you put in a 4-digit code in the cell phone. It fires off a bullet.
Cute. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, one of these was actually found in the wild. I want to say it was in the UK.
Wow.
So it's kind of crazy that these things actually do exist to some extent. Although I doubt that they are, you know, in wide use. It's probably one of those things that, you know, when all else fails, that's something that you might rely upon that may or may not get you out of a tricky situation, unless you're James Bond, in which case it always does.
Right, because it's a plot gadget.
Yep.
Yeah. That film also had, I think, the first example of a watch with a laser beam cutting tool.
Yeah, which, again, not realistic, because you would need a lot of power to be able to create a laser of significant intensity for you to cut through anything. Now, we could have laser pointers in our watches. In fact, I'm sure there's some watches out there that do. But for something that could actually cut, you would need pretty significant power, and that's not something that you could fit in a wristwatch form factor. Moving on to A View to a Kill. Well, guess who's back with us? Roger Moore!
Yay!
It's 1985!
Yay!
So... here's an interesting piece of technology that that you found an example of, at least a concept that's similar to it. One of the things James Bond has is a ring that hides a camera in it. Now, this is also, especially in 1985, when you're talking about film cameras, really hard to do, because how do you miniaturize all that stuff so it fits into a ring? But on top of that, you know, now even with a digital one, it would still be tricky, because again, you have to worry about power. Like, where does the power come from?
Right. News broke in late 2012 that a design studio was working on a digital camera in a ring thing like this. They're calling it the Cammering.
Yeah.
But as of right now, I haven't heard any further developments about it.
Everything I looked into looked like it was a concept, not even beyond a concept at this point. So we may never see a real one. Now, the pictures, the concept drawings make it look super cool, and I totally want one.
Yeah. And in fact, lots of people on like Pinterest and Fancy and places like that have been like, this thing is terrific.
But yeah, there's no...
The drawing is terrific.
Yeah, the drawing is terrific. It's amazing what people can draw, isn't it? Now, if only that thing had come real. I don't know how you get around the power thing. You could have a small battery in it, but it would drain that pretty quickly, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Anyway, they also had an electric shaver that was actually hiding eavesdropping technology, which, again,
super
totally
legit.
Exists.
Yeah. And then that iceberg boat submarine.
Yeah, it all depends on who you ask whether it counted as a boat or a submarine, but it's disguised as an iceberg. It's better than a crocodile. However, this particular iceberg boat also, as I recall, had a bed in it and champagne.
Iceberg-shaped submersibles is where I keep all of my luxury items, so I'm not sure why you're questioning this, Jonathan.
This is one of those issues that I have with James Bond, is just not only that he's a spy that draws unwanted attention to himself wherever he goes, but he's also, like, living this insane, lavish lifestyle that nobody does, except for maybe Elon Musk. Maybe that's why he bought that submersible, that he's trying to become James Bond. Anyway, I just thought it was weird. So now we're moving on to The Living Daylights, where we get a brand new Bond, Timothy Dalton.
Woo?
Yeah, Timothy Dalton was not one of the more lauded James Bonds.
Less than popular. At least I think Roger Moore people have a kind of fondness for.
Like
out
a campiness.
Of, sure.
Sure.
But...
Timothy Dalton, well, it's not entirely his fault. The Timothy Dalton movies were a little dour. You know, they weren't... It seemed like a lot of fun was missing from some of those Timothy Dalton movies.
They were a little bit humorless, I think,
right.
Yeah.
So The Living Daylights, let's talk about some of the gadgets in that.
Yeah, let's see. We had a keychain that included knockout gas to be released if you whistled the correct notes.
Which was Rule Britannia for James Bond. Presumably, each 00 agent would have a different whistle.
Music
cue. So, Rule Britannia. So, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do would release knockout gas. But it also could explode if used a different kind of whistle.
For James, they used a wolf whistle.
Which Q, of course, comments upon, as you would expect. And it was totally appropriate for Mr. Misogyny James Bond. Also contained inside this keychain was a lockpick capable of opening up like 90% of the world's locks, according to Q. Which is amazing. Not sure that any keychain could contain all of these things and still be a keychain and not like a kit.
it seems unlikely. Yes, that's again one of those physics issues.
Like, how do you pack? How do you make enough room for enough knockout gas to be effective for anything, or enough explosive charge to be dangerous, and have enough room for the lock picks as well? All three of those things into something that tiny would be really hard to do. Also, how could you make sure that when one goes off, like when the gas is released, it doesn't accidentally also make it explode? Because knockout gas is great if you don't want to hurt people, but if you do knockout gas and then immediately the keychain explodes, that's not good.
Yeah, I would assume that whatever release mechanism would be, I don't know. Yeah. At any rate, Then there was a boombox.
Yes, the ghetto blaster, as Q would say. It was meant for agents who were operating in the United States. Because as we all know, by 1987, we all were walking around with 4-foot-long radios perched on our shoulders.
Well, it's the only thing that matched with hammer pants weren't until the 1990s.
No, we were mostly looking for sheets of cardboard upon which we would bust some moves. I would encourage you to watch the documentary Break Into Electric Boogaloo to learn more. So anyway, the Ghetto Blaster was a rocket launcher that was disguised to be a boombox.
The heaviest boombox ever made.
You would imagine for it to be an effective rocket launcher, it would probably be pretty weighty. To be fair, boomboxes were already pretty heavy back in those days, but this would be even heavier.
However, Dalton as Bond did get a new Aston Martin.
Yes, the V8 Vantage Volante, which had hubcap lasers.
Retractable skis.
Yeah, retractable spikes. Also a missile launcher and a rocket that would make it go, as I put in the notes, wicked fast. Oh, also had a self-destruct system, which most of the Aston Martins after this point did too. There's one of those things, Q's, come standard. You know, self-destruct system, you know. Not that Bond ever needed the self-destruct system.
Yeah, no, he was usually pretty good at wrecking those all on his own.
To be fair, I think one of his vehicles did self-destruct when someone tried to break into it, and it was part of the anti-theft device. It's a very effective one.
Not just a car alarm. No, that's great.
No.
That's much less annoying than a car alarm, actually.
Because it's over in a moment.
Yeah.
It doesn't go on all morning long.
Moving on to our next film, License to Kill, from 1989.
I remember this one, too. So this one had a plastic explosives in the form of toothpaste called Dentonite.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And had a pack of cigarettes that were used as the detonator. So you would squeeze out the plastique, and then use the cigarettes implanted in it to be the blasting caps. So they don't actually say what type of plastic explosives they're using. I assume it was something similar to PE4, which is what the Brits use in the U.S. We use something very similar called C4.
Right.
I say we. I just mean the entities that have access to these things. I don't use either.
They don't give you C4?
Not anymore. So, these things require blasting caps. They actually can withstand impact pretty well. They can withstand heat pretty well, unless it's super intense explosive heat that releases very quickly, which is why you need the blasting caps. So, it's another one of those things where you'd have to have a very effective blasting cap technology to make this plastic explosive stuff ignite and explode. So it's not like it's impossible. It would just be really tricky to do in that particular form factor.
And then we had some camera technology in this one. There was some kind of weird sniper camera gun thing, a sniper rifle disguised as a camera, but
it was
also
like a Decepticon.
Yeah. snipers in disguise. Yes.
Yep.
We also had a Polaroid camera that had deathly lasers.
Well, the lasers were meant to somehow create an X-ray version of whatever it was you were taking a picture of. So if I had this Polaroid and you were wearing a trench coat and you were laden down with various weaponry, which, guys, I gotta tell you, Lauren holds her weapons all in the open, so it's not like she would be concealing them because she doesn't feel the need to do that. But if she did,
I prefer the 9-foot long anime sword.
Right.
Personally.
Right. It's very comical to watch Lauren keep on bumping into door frames. But no, let's say that I wanted to check out and see if Lauren was in fact carrying, you know, an arsenal underneath that trench coat. Take a photo with this Polaroid and it had this little red laser flash that came out of the flash instead of a regular camera flash. And the Polaroid would come out with the X-ray version of whatever that picture is. Again, not really a thing. Using X-rays would be dangerous. Using that camera would be really dangerous on any extended.
So the lasers would be deadly the end.
Just,
for everyone.
Yeah, it would just mean that you would be deadly in the sense that you would eventually probably contract cancer as opposed to get burned by a laser. But yeah, it wasn't meant to be a weapon. It was meant to try and detect, you know, people smuggling in guns into places where you don't want them to have them.
We'll be back with more about spy technology after this quick break.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, in our last James Bond film, we had Timothy Dalton. But now in our next one, we go up to the next actor to play James Bond.
Yeah, it would be a six-year break in between these movies, and the next film that came out was GoldenEye in 1995 with Pierce Brosnan.
Now, Pierce Brosnan, a lot of people felt was a good, refreshing breath after Timothy Dalton. Again, I think the Timothy Dalton movies, that was more of a scripting issue than necessarily a casting one. But Pierce Brosnan definitely brought in some... kind of an edge to the character that had sort of not been there before. It would definitely be refined later on. So GoldenEye, besides being one of the best Nintendo 64 video games ever made.
I'm glad that you said that, because that was going to be my really important note about this film.
Was also a great movie. He had his Aston Martin DB5 again, so we're back to the Aston Martin.
This one in particular had a fax machine in the dashboard.
Just like any sexy, suave spy.
Right.
Now, let me fax this.
But more and more interestingly, cellular voice communication,
right.
Capacity.
Yeah, 1995, this is when we're starting to see cell phones start to get adopted in large numbers. But, you know, to have like a hands-free cellular voice command system inside of a car was definitely bleeding edge tech at the time. They also had, it's actually one of my favorite scenes in GoldenEye. There's a ballpoint pen that Q gives to Bond, and the pen is an actual explosive device, a grenade that you activate by clicking it three times, since it's a ballpoint. So if you click it three times, it activates and has a 4-second long fuse, and you can deactivate it by clicking it three more times. So Q says, you know, you click it three times, click, 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 and the 4-second fuse starts and goes click, click, click. And then James Bond takes it and says, how long did you say that fuse was? Click, click, click. And then Q just looks at him, takes the pen back, calmly clicks it three times and says, grow up, 007. And then, of course, there's the little line about, they always said the pen is mightier than the sword. He says, well, this time they're right because of me, says Q. So there were a lot of other silly gadgets shown in the background during the Q laboratory scene, like some of the silliest ones. And, you had like a ejector seat shown off. There was there was one point where Q shows up. Actually, when Q first shows up in the scene, he's wheeling out in a wheelchair and he's got one leg in a big plaster cast. And Bond says, oh, I'm sorry about your leg. And then Q demonstrates that it's actually a missile launcher, and a missile launches from the cast leg and flies about 20 feet to the right of a dummy that he was pointing toward. And then Q just casually stands up out of the wheelchair, and you see that it was a false leg the whole time. And we had a request by Ian on Facebook that said that we needed to explain that, if not for the practicality, but for the sheer comedic value of that particular device. There's also one that they don't comment on, like you were saying earlier, Lauren. There, you know, occasionally in these Q segments, you just see stuff going on in the background hilarious, but no one says anything.
Right.
There's one point where you see a guy in a lab coat walk into a phone booth, and then suddenly the phone booth just fills up with a big inflated balloon trapping the guy against the door. And he can't, because the door pulls in on phone booth, he can't get out, and you just see him squished up against the glass, and that is hilarious. Also doesn't play any other part in the movie whatsoever. That starts to feel like it belongs more in Get Smart than on James Bond.
Yeah, so some of these around this era started to seem like parodies of, I mean, even more, at least they were being self-aware, because I feel like the stuff that was going on in Roger Moore's time was straightforwardly like,
yeah, it was just,
this is great.
It was just camp the way the old Batman series was camp.
Right.
So we move on to Tomorrow Never Dies.
That was a 1997 film, again, with Pierce Brosnan.
Yep, they had a mobile phone that could act as a fingerprint scanner. And as we've all mentioned, iPhone 5S does that now. So we actually have technology that could do this, that, you know, we could easily adapt that. In fact, I'm sure there are law enforcement agencies that have adapted that technology to work in the field.
Sure.
It also contained a lockpick in the antenna. It was an electronic lockpick. And you could put the lockpick in a lock, and you press a key on the phone, it would cause it to pick a lock automatically. And it also was a 20,000-volt stun gun, so you could zap people if they wanted to run up your minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it could do one other thing. It was a remote control.
It was a remote control for Bond's BMW.
Yeah. First of all, BMW?
Yeah, Bond had a BMW.
A German car?
Yeah. I was a little bit irked by that too. But the part where it was a remote control that, you know, could let the car locate Bond and drive itself to him.
Yeah.
Is technology that people are very much working on right now.
Yeah. We've talked about autonomous cars in the past. This is truly an autonomous car that could, you know, it could identify the signal where Bond was and then plan out a route and drive to him.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, going in a straight line would not necessarily work if there were, say, you know, lakes or buildings or something in the way. So it actually has to be able to navigate.
Right, right. And as that kind of technology gets better, we're not quite there yet, except in extreme prototype phase. But Steven on Facebook requested that one.
Yep. So also, this was, you know, we weren't the only ones who got a little miffed about the Aston Martin going away and the BMW coming in. That ended up being a kind of a sticking point for a few people. BMW would stick around for a little bit, but don't worry. If you guys love your British cars, you'll get payoff a little bit later. There was also a bad guy who had a wristband grappling hook. So it was something that you could fire from the wristband. It had a little python or piton, if you're British, that would fly out and embed into something, and it had a high tension strength wire connected to it, so you could swing on it or climb. In this case, it was a character who could use it to run down a vertical surface, because that happens in Bond movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things that I question the legitimacy of, only from the sense of we could make a wrist mounted device that could fire something. In fact, fire something hard enough to hurt or kill somebody.
Certainly.
But to fire something so hard that it embeds in a very tough material like stone.
And is high tensile enough that you could furthermore climb up
right.
that cable?
I mean, that's a lot of...
Or down, as the case may be.
Exactly. Because, I mean, not only does it have to be strong enough to penetrate, right? It has to be strong enough to carry the weight of the line.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a lot of stuff you got to figure out so that this thing will work the way it's supposed to work. Same problem I have with some of Batman's stuff.
But
that's a different podcast.
I think we should. That is a different podcast.
We'll do someday.
Yes, I think that we should call whoever created that and be like, so we have the space elevator idea that we're trying to work out.
So if you've got enough of that wire that apparently is incredibly strong, let's use it for something else.
Let's talk about that.
That moves on to The World Is Not Enough, which, as I recall, is James Bond's family motto.
Was it?
Yeah. The world is not enough. That's the Bond family crest. If I'm not mistaken, I'm totally speaking from memory here. But it was made in 1999. It was another Pierce Brosnan film.
Right. We had yet another wristwatch with a grappling hook and high tensile wire.
Yeah. They also had eyeglasses that incorporated X-ray technology. So you could look at people and turn on the x-ray specs, and they were x-ray specs where you could actually see if someone was carrying a gun. I'm sure Bond also used it for other purposes.
I feel like that's likely. And of course, again, miniaturization of the technology is an issue, and also the whole cancer thing where radiation is radiation-y.
Yeah, it's ionizing radiation, which means that it's not good for us to be around. Non-ionizing? That's okay for the most part.
Sure.
Ionizing, not okay.
Yeah. However, there are some infrared glasses that exist and can be used for similar nifty stuff. Just this year, vascular imaging goggles were released that can help medical professionals like locate a vein for blood samples or
etc. Pretty awesome.
Which is pretty awesome. And of course, we've got photon cameras that can help us see around corners. We talked about that in a forward thinking episode.
I think. About how it measures the time it takes for light to come back around. Like a portion of the light hits an open doorway and goes into a room, and some of that light gets reflected back, hits the doorway again, gets reflected back toward the camera. And by measuring the amount of time those individual photons took to go out and come back, a camera can actually reconstruct what is inside the room next door without having a clear line of sight inside it, which is crazy, but it's real. It's not x-ray glasses.
It's never going to be x-ray glasses, I don't
think.
Yeah.
But I saw in the back of this comic book, this guy's holding up his hand. He's got this crazy look on his face. Looks like Drew Carey.
However, things that I think are definitely up and coming.
Yeah.
Bagpipes that can hold machine guns and flamethrowers.
Look, aren't bagpipes deadly enough already? Do we really need to add more killing power to bagpipes?
Take it up with Q, okay?
Or should I say, ugh. Yeah, that was another one of those things seen in Q's lab, is this guy with a set of bagpipes that turn into a machine gun and flamethrower. Because, you know, that's exactly what we need, are more Highlanders with high caliber weapons. Oy. All right. This was also one of those things that when I saw it, I was like, this is hilarious. And yet there's a real world technology that's similar to what was shown on the screen. So James Bond's wearing the ski jacket. There's this whole chase scene where he's driving what's essentially a snowmobile with a parachute and a fan on the back of it so that it can fly in places. And he's being chased by bad guys who are also on these things. And then he and a lady are on this icy area where the spot above them is breaking apart. It's going to cause like a little avalanche. It's going to crush them in a second. And so quickly, James Bond grabs the lady and hits something on his jacket, which inflates this ball around them. So they get surrounded by this big inflatable ball and sort of like a Zorb, one of those big inflated ones that you could run around inside.
Like a
similar
hamster
to
ball.
That. Yeah. Big inflatable. Inflated hamster ball.
Yeah.
And that ends up providing shelter when everything falls on top of them so that they don't get crushed by the snow and ice that falls. And at first, when you look at this, you're like, oh, come on, that's just so silly. However, it's actually kind of similar. There's this this cool...
Just announced this year, I think there's this inflatable helmet.
Yeah, it looks like it's this kind of bulky scarf that you would wear. It's the Hovding. And it's an airbag for cyclists. And the idea is that it has this inflatable helmet that can expand rapidly if it detects a sudden change in your acceleration, and cover your head in this inflatable bag. So that way, if you have a crash, your head is protected, even if you're not wearing, you know, even if you don't want to wear a standard,
a big, bulky,
basic
standard helmet.
So kind of cool. I mean, in the sense that there is technology that's being developed right now that's similar to this this idea that was proposed in the movie.
I would think that anything potentially sharp like ice might be a bad idea for something like that.
Because the
material would have to be able to withstand puncture.
I think it would require a lot of pressure on the inside of that inflatable object to withstand the huge amount of weight of an avalanche. Like it would need to be mostly rigid, right?
Yeah.
It couldn't be like the
soft,
bouncy castle sort of thing.
It would
just crush you.
We've got more to say about spy tech, but first let's take another quick break.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Moving on to Die Another Day.
A 2002 film, and that would be our last one with Pierce Brosnan.
Yep. In this one, James Bond gets a ring that can emit an ultra-high frequency signal that is powerful enough to shatter bulletproof glass. Which, okay, so materials have this resonant frequency, right? That if you match the resonant frequency, it causes the material to start to vibrate.
Mm-hmm.
And Mythbusters did a whole thing on this where they showed, you know, the whole idea of being able to shatter a wine glass with your voice if you're able to sing at the right note. And they showed that at the right level of not just the right frequency, but the right volume, the right intensity,
yeah,
you could actually make this happen. You could, then they shot it in slow motion where you could actually see the glass deforming as it was shaking. It was really cool.
Mm-hmm. However, squeezing that amount of energy into a ring is going to be difficult.
Yeah. Being able to project that much volume so that you are able to shatter something like a pane of glass. Because, I mean, if you ever watch these videos, glass can deform a surprising amount before it breaks.
Yeah, a really weird, scary amount.
Yeah, when slow motion, you look at it and you're like, that doesn't even look real. So it would, I certainly don't think you could pack that kind of wallop in a ring. Now, I mean, you could punch the glass. Of course, if it's bulletproof, you're probably just going to break your hand.
Probably.
But anyway, the basic concept is sound. The execution is questionable.
Not so much, yeah. The Aston Martin in this one was... So we had an invisible car.
Yeah, the Aston Martin Vanquish, also sometimes called the Aston Martin Vanish. It was a car that, according to the film, the idea was that it had lots of these little tiny cameras all around the car. And what would happen is that it would project, it would capture whatever's coming on, mm-hmm. like oncoming.
And project it onto the surface of the car itself, right. therefore doing kind of an invisibility cloak sort of thing.
Yeah, the idea being that if you're looking at the car, you're actually seeing what's on the other side of the car as opposed to the car itself. This worked for everything, not just the car's body, but the wheels, the glass, the windows, the windshield, everything was completely cloaked. And when it moved like, you know, like the Klingon starship in Star Trek.
Right, right. Researchers and artists have in fact come up with invisibility cloaks that work on similar principles, but not at Aston Martin road speeds,
right.
really.
And to be fair to James Bond, at first, when you see this, the car's not moving. It's still, but then it does start to move and it's moving perfectly fine. Like you see the shimmer as it moves, but it's not like, you know, it's not like the stuff on the car is lagging behind 3 seconds from what is actually around it.
Right. Right. Right now, the best technology for this kind of thing is on the micrometer scale.
Yeah.
You know, carbon nanotubes, stuff like that.
And also a lot of the stuff we think of as invisibility cloaks right now is really for bands of light that we personally cannot see. It's just that. From a laboratory standpoint, certain types of light will pass through as opposed to reflecting off. It's just not in the visible spectrum.
Yeah.
So whoop-de-doo.
Yeah. And that was a request from a couple people on Facebook, both Richard and
Monty. Mm-hmm. Now, it also, of course, had your standard James Bond equipment, ejector seat, which in this film, James Bond uses to flip the car from being upside down on its hood back to being right side up. The ejector seat provides the flippy flip.
Yeah. Mythbusters tested part of that as part of that episode that they did about the ejector seats.
I missed that part. Mm-hmm. I totally forgot that part of the movie. You know, I don't think I've ever seen Die Another Day. I've seen the clips, right? I've seen the clips of this particular scene because I just remember yelling, oh, come on, like 40 times.
Yeah. And then it had the standard, you know, machine gun, torpedoes.
Right. Right. Yeah. All that stuff that, you know, James Bond he can't leave home without.
Right.
So moving on, we've got, we got the boring Bond, right? Casino Royale with this Daniel Craig person.
This was a 2006 film.
He's dreamy. I can't lie. So yeah, there's a new Aston Martin in this one, the DBS V12, which also had a whole bunch of high tech, first aid gear that was all stored in the glove compartment. So nothing like super crazy in this one. And a lot of this was the idea of going back to James Bond and kind of grounding the character a little bit more, making it a little more gritty.
Yeah, I liked this entire recent reboot with Daniel Craig. I thought it was a little bit, it's a little bit overwrought at times, but that's okay.
And they still have cutting edge technology, and in some cases, cutting edge technology that outstrips what we can currently do, but that's not, it's not so much a...
It's not as goofy.
Yeah, and it's not as over
usually.
The top.
Right, right. One of the other bits of tech from this movie was an implanted microchip that could act as both a homing device and a
biometric monitor of
some
sort.
Sure. Which also could send that info back out to MI6.
Yeah, which again is a little tricky. Like, how do you create a transmitter with
the size of a pencil eraser that can also
transmit this stuff? Not that there aren't, you know, implantable technologies that are totally dissimilar to this. We do have things that are similar, but they work on very, very short range.
Absolutely. So
the idea is that it's when you can actually monitor the patient in person as opposed to...
Yes, when you can kind of poke a instrument directly at their arm.
Right, right.
Rather than,
you know, 500 miles away.
Yeah. There was also a touchscreen table in MI6, which, you know... Microsoft had something like as of 2008.
Yeah, the Surface table. The mm-hmm. you know, before there was the Surface tablet, dear friends, there was the Microsoft Surface table, which is when they called the tablet Microsoft Surface. Again, that was also when I threw my hands up in the air and said, oh, come on. I don't do it just to James Bond. I also do it to Microsoft. But I said, you already have a product called the Surface, and
don't
it's a
do
table.
This. It's confusing.
It's hard for me to write about this. You're making my articles not be relevant anymore.
You got to play with one of those at one of the CESs, didn't you?
Yeah, they had one where it was on display. That back then, Microsoft had a presence at CES. They used to have a giant booth,
mm-hmm.
and they had the Microsoft Surface there, and you could play with it. In fact, there were a couple of different booths that had a Microsoft Surface. I think... it was like Intel or something else also had one. So the neat thing about the Surface was it had the multi-touch capability, and this was before you saw that in everything, right? So it was one of those implementations that was really cool. So this was kind of predicting that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to Quantum of Solace.
Craig's second film that came out in 2008.
So, again, we have another magical telephone in a way. So this one could create a composite photo of a subject, even if Bond only got like a profile shot. So if you got a shot from the side of someone, this phone could reconstruct that person's entire face, including the side that was not facing the camera.
And this is one of my personal pet peeves. And it's that whole zoom and enhance concept where I'm like, no, if the camera hasn't recorded that information, it cannot give you.
The best it can do is assume that you have an incredibly symmetrical face and therefore mirror it.
So, if like James Bond encounters, you know, mostly supermodels, then in that universe, it's actually very effective.
To be fair, Lauren, James Bond does encounter mostly supermodels.
This is what I'm saying. You know, that's okay.
Now, whereas
never mind.
If James Bond took a picture of me in profile, however, it would you'd be like, wow, who's that devastatingly handsome gentleman? And then you see me and you're like, that cannot be the guy that's in this picture because that guy's nose is all crooked and stuff. I had a tough childhood. Anyway, it was, it's not that this technology is totally beyond us, but it is one of those things where I would highly suspect the reliability of any picture that is completely, created from just a portion of someone's face. Now we have seen interesting scanning technology with people using something like the Kinect, where they do a very slow turn and it gives a full 3D scan of a person's head. But in that case, you're talking about a device that's actually getting data from all points, right? It's not just one side.
Right.
All right. Then what comes up to Skyfall, the as of right now most recent film in the James Bond franchise that came out in 2012 and also starred Mr. Craig.
Right.
Mr. Dreamy Craig.
And this film was very much stressing that kind of stripped down aesthetic, versus especially some of the earlier goofier 1980s films. So they kind of make a bit out of it when Bond and the new Q meet up for the first time. Q gives him this little box and all it contains is a Walter PPK and a little radio transmitter and Bond's like, that's it. Like not exactly Christmas, is it?
However, his gun does have a scanner on the handle. So it only Bond can fire it.
Oh, right. It's a little palm print reader thing.
Yeah.
Which is technically possible, although it would be harder, on a mechanical device than it would have been on a digital.
Yeah.
Thing
so if to, you have some sort of digital safety,
digitize the safety or something.
Yeah. If you make the safety completely separate from a mechanical approach and you make it an electronic approach, I could see that, like, if it's engaged unless the quote unquote right person is holding the gun, that's the only way I could imagine that making sense.
I'll give that one to Q. And we also see a return of the Aston Martin DB5.
Yep.
Like the super classic one with all of the super classic stuff.
Pretty much from Goldfinger.
Yeah.
Which, you know, to be fair, Skyfall had a lot of little nods to some of the earlier Bond films. Like you would actually, you know, see examples of some of the stuff that appeared in earlier Bond films, just kind of surreptitiously hidden in the scene, not something that was, you know, paraded out in front of you. But that's one of those cool things, is seeing them pay homage to this rich past that James Bond has accumulated, even as they go forward and potentially go back and recreate some of these older stories.
Yeah.
So it's possible that we'll see some of these older stories reimagined in new form. Some of them may just be completely written, you know, from scratch. Some of the James Bond films are not based off of any Fleming novel.
Sure.
But maybe some of the future ones will be just reimagined versions of that.
Yeah. And I'm really curious to see how, I mean, as we keep saying, as we have been saying throughout these two episodes, you know, a lot of this stuff that was crazy revolutionary sci-fi tech in the 1960s is stuff that's on our smartphones today.
Yeah.
That wraps up this classic episode of Tech Stuff. Hope you enjoyed it. If you have suggestions for future topics of Tech Stuff, whether they are classic or otherwise, let me know. Send me a message on Twitter. It's the best way to get in touch with me. And the handle you should use is TechStuffHSW. And I'll talk to you again really soon.
Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.